Coming up, let's get into the seven biggest NBA offseason moves so far. All right, NBA free agency is in full swing, so let's get into our seven biggest NBA offseason moves so far, starting with the most shocking one of all. The Bucks are signing Miles Turner to a $107 million deal over 4 years, stealing him from the Indiana Pacers. And to do it, they're waiving Damian Lillard, stretching his contract over the next 5 years, going to pay him $22.5 million in dead money over five seasons, getting Turner from Indiana. This shocked me. Like, I legitimately was like, when I read the post from Shams that this was happening, every NBA executive I've been texting with all day has been like, all of our intel said he was going to go back to Indiana. Well, here we are. The Bucks get Miles Turner after losing Brook Lopez to the Clippers. They sign Gary Harris, a solid 3-and-D guard. They re-sign Kevin Porter, Gary Trent, Taurean Prince, and Jericho Sims. I think all of this points to Giannis staying. Now, I know Chris Haynes reported that Giannis is unhappy with how it was handled. We'll see how much of this develops, but I can't imagine the Bucks stretching Lillard's contract and signing Miles Turner, who is a very good center, but a flawed center, without getting some type of feeling from Giannis that this is something he would approve of. Because here's the thing. Giannis, at the end of the season in April, Damian Lillard out at the time, Giannis was averaging a triple-double. They put the ball in his hands. It was point Giannis. He was averaging over 10 assists, facilitating with shooters and speed around him. To me, all of these moves, getting Turner, seeing what he could play like in Indiana, playing that fast pace, bringing in Gary Harris, bringing back Porter, Trent, Prince, and then Sims as well, a lob threat. To me, and bringing back, how could I forget, Bobby Portis as well. Bobby Portis, now you have two stretch bigs, all of these guys who can play fast, up and down, versatile players. I think this is going to be a Giannis-centric team. So we'll see. You know, it's always possible. Giannis could still demand a trade. But I think all of this points to Giannis staying and us seeing like Giannis in this faster-paced role, running up and down with a bunch of shooters, bunch of versatility around him. And like if he does stay, if you're thinking about the MVP a year from now, Giannis, his odds have to be moving up if he does indeed stay with the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll find out more that happens there. But Turner going there, like, my God, for the Pacers. Dude, I feel so sorry for Pacers fans because you're in Game 7 of the NBA Finals after this just magical run. And then Haliburton tears his Achilles. And then this. Miles Turner there for 10 years, 10 years of trade rumors involving Miles Turner. And then at a time where everybody thinks he's going to stay, he leaves. And for Indiana, all reports, everything I've heard, everything every respected reporter has said is that Indiana did this because they didn't want to pay him what the Bucks were willing to pay him. They were trying to stay out of the luxury tax. And if you're Tyrese Haliburton, you're recovering from this Achilles, if you're Pascal Siakam, if you're Rick Carlisle, you got to be heated at this, at Pacers ownership for cheaping out and losing a guy like Miles Turner, who's a part of this franchise for 10 years and a fixture of this team. They don't have any other centers. They didn't draft a center. They haven't signed anybody else. They have their $14.1 million non-taxpayer exception they can use to sign somebody, but they weren't going to pay for Turner. Who exactly are they going to pay for it here? So for Indiana, I mean, look, this sucks. This sucks undeniably. But like anytime, you know, crappy things happen, I'm always trying to think of like, well, okay, what are the silver linings? Well, you before the finals are over, you make the trade with the Pelicans and you get back your 2026 first round pick. So Indiana, we know they're not going to be the same team next year. They're probably still good enough as is to get into the playoffs, right? As a lower seed because the East is so bad. But with Turner, he's not perfect. He's not perfect. So for the Bucks, getting him at a little over $25 million annually, he's not the same rim protector he was once before. He's not the same defender he once before. He averaged 4.4 boards per game in the finals. I mean, he had three boards per game in the Eastern Conference Finals. As a 7-footer getting 4 rebounds per game, it's kind of pathetic. And so Turner, as good as he is, has some major deficiencies as a rebounder. As a defender, he's not quite in his peak anymore. We saw some of the limitations with him as a scorer. He shot below 30% from three deep into the playoffs. He was not a great at-rim finisher either. He has his flaws. So for Indiana, or for any team, I think you can do better than Miles Turner as your center. It's just the way this happened that is just such a blow. Going back to the Halliburton injury, the fact they're doing this for luxury tax reasons, I just wonder what's next. What are we going to see Indiana do? Are we going to see them go after DeAndre Ayton? Like 3 years ago, they signed Ayton to a max contract offer sheet. At the time, the Suns matched that offer sheet. They kept DeAndre Ayton. Could they go to DeAndre Ayton again, who's still, as of recording this, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday? Maybe you go after Ayton. Or do the Pacers go the other way? They have their 2026 first round pick in an absolutely loaded draft class. Loaded. I know some of you listening or watching this are saying, well, you people say this every year in NBA media. No, this year's different with 2026. You got Darren Peterson at Kansas. You got AJ DiBonsa at BYU. You got Cam Boozer at Duke. And that's just three guys who are number one pick quality, among others, that could play themselves into that conversation. So for Indiana, do you go the other way? Do you try to bottom out? Do you try to miss the playoffs and have the 8th best odds and be somewhat, you know, fun and competitive? You know, Nembhard has an all-star year and all that type of stuff. But do you go the other way and trade away another guy? Like, I wonder if a team calls up Indiana about Pascal Siakam. Are they listening? Are they listening right now? It's too early to say. Turner just signed with Milwaukee about an hour ago. But I'm just wondering, what more could actually happen with the Pacers? What's next for them? Are they going to add an Ayton, or could they subtract further?
We'll be right back.
The Nuggets also have had a massive offseason so far. They traded Michael Porter Jr. in an unprotected 2032 first-round pick to the Nets for Cam Johnson. This accomplished getting under the apron, and also it's an upgrade because Cam Johnson is just as potent of a shooter as MPJ, but he's way better off the dribble, way better as a passer, and also a better defender as well. So for Denver, I mean, dude, like, I know you gave up your 32 first, but this is a team that recognizes they're all in. They get an upgrade, a more reliable player in Cam Johnson. I think this is going to be one of the best two-man combinations in all of basketball. Cam Johnson running through screens and handoffs with Jokic, and he can do more off the dribble. So you could have Jokic screening for Cam Johnson. Like, I just, like, Cam Johnson is not the guy you saw in Phoenix years ago, where he was spot-up shooter, standstill guy. Watch Cam Johnson video from what he became in Brooklyn and in recent years in general. The dude is a bucket getter off the dribble. He's a solid guy who can be a facilitator, a secondary guy. So you get Jamal Murray, hopefully healthy and in shape, Cam Johnson, Jokic, and then you make some other good moves. You bring back Bruce Brown, going to be wearing his cowboy hat, his cowboy boots. He belongs in Denver. It's so awesome that he's ending up back there. And then they made a really smart trade today. They traded Dario Saric to the Kings for Jonas Valanciunas. And so you look at Denver. A year ago, they drafted Daron Holmes, who tore his Achilles on the first day of NBA Summer League. Daron Holmes, a spacing big, a versatile switching big. Hopefully he's able to come back healthy. Now you add Valanciunas, who can shoot a little bit, who can add some floor spacing, but he's a bruiser. To me, like, he is by far, not even close, the best backup of Jokic's entire career. It's not even close. I mean, you could say Nurkic, like, when they were young, but I'm talking since Jokic was in his prime. So you get Valanciunas, and you have Daron Holmes hopefully coming back healthy as backups to Jokic. It should no longer be Nuggets plus 18 Jokic on the floor, minus 25 without him on the floor. So I think Valanciunas, Daron Holmes, and obviously Bruce Brown, and then Cam Johnson. Nuggets, I mean, dude, their championship odds are pretty low right now. I like their title odds. They just went to 7 games against the Thunder with MPJ playing with one shoulder. And they've had massive upgrades here, man. I think the Nuggets are huge, huge, huge winners. more winners this offseason. The Atlanta Hawks, man, they get Kristaps Porzingis for cheap from Boston. They trade down on draft night. They get the number 23 pick moving down from 13. They draft Asa Newell. And then, as I said on my pod earlier this week, they're likely going to absorb Nickeil Alexander-Walker into their traded player exception. Well, boom. That's exactly what they did. They got Nickeil Alexander-Walker, one of the better wing defenders in basketball, backing up Dyson Daniels. You got Reese Shea entering year two. You get Jalen Johnson coming back. You sign Luke Kennard. You make multiple free agent additions on your team. I mean, Atlanta feels deep. They feel perfectly constructed around Trae Young. They have front court versatility. Porzingis, Okongwu extends his range every year. Jalen Johnson coming back. Reese Shea can play some four as well. And then they draft Asa Newell at number 23, who they wanted at number 13. Like, they get an A plus this offseason. And they very well might not be done yet. But I absolutely love what the Hawks have done. Big kudos to that front office. And they're putting exactly the type of team around Trae Young that gives Trae Young a chance. It helps mitigate his flaws as a smaller defender. You get a bunch of shooters around him and guys who can handle the ball a little bit too, which gives Trae a break on ball. It can highlight some of his strengths off the ball. I just can't wait to see what the Hawks look like this season, because I think they legitimately could be one of the four best teams in the Eastern Conference. The Knicks got better too, though. The Knicks signed Gershon Yabusele to a two-year, $12 million contract. Also got Jordan Clarkson on a veteran minimum. These are two really good signings. And with Yabu at 2 years, $12 million, huge loss for Philadelphia. Huge loss for them. They were banking on him coming back. And for the Knicks, I mean, Yabu, knockdown three-point shooter, energetic guy on defense. Just, he plays with an enthusiasm that I think fits that Knicks culture regardless of who they end up signing as their head coach. And it seems like, you know, as I've been saying for a few weeks now, all signs point to Mike Brown. He just had his second interview. We'll see if that actually happens. But Yabusele going to the Knicks gives them more front court versatility. I look forward to seeing some five-out lineups with Yabu and with Cat in the front court, or with Yabu at the four, Mitchell Robinson, rim runner at the five. You just have more flexibility with ways that you can play. And I think that's one of the themes I talk about a lot with the need for team building nowadays, is having flexibility with the style of play you have and the types of lineups you put out there that dictate that style. We saw that with OKC. Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein in the front court together, or just one of them. It changes the way they play. It changes the way a defense has to react against your offensive system. So I love that Yabu signing for the Knicks. I think that's a subtle one, you know, in the grand scheme of all the names out there, but a very big one for their style of play. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. One of the other things that's on my mind this offseason, the bigs. We're seeing big man musical chairs. Brook Lopez, he left the Bucks for the Clippers. That was a little bit of a surprise, for a two-year, $18 million deal. Luke Kornet left the Celtics for the Spurs. Going to be a great backup next to Victor Wembanyama. I also look forward to seeing those two on the floor together. And then Clint Capela went to the Rockets. So with Lopez going to the Clippers, I talked about earlier in the week how Yannick Cohn and Nedenheiser is a fascinating rookie backup for Ivica Zubac. Obviously, now you have Brook Lopez. Maybe you're not going to see a lot of Nedenheiser. But I think the three bigs they have bring dramatically different styles and some overlapping skills in a good way. Zubac, elite low post scorer, elite drop defender. Then you add Lopez, very good drop defender still, even in his mid-30s. And he's the floor spacing guy. So different drop defenders with different skills on offense. So for the Clippers, you're an offense. You're worried about driving into Zubac. He's off the floor. Oh, you're feeling good. Ben Simmons is out there. No more. Now it's Brook Lopez. Or they have Nedenheiser, a lob guy who, you know, he's not quite the 100th percentile athlete that prime DeAndre Jordan was, but he's like 99th percentile. He's an elite athlete. He's your lob guy. I could see him having an instant impact with James Harden and some high pick and rolls. And so the Clippers have front court versatility. The Houston Rockets, they bring back Steven Adams. They signed Clint Capela. So this is a team now. Clint Capela is not what he was in his prime. But he's still a more vertical, more of a lob threat than Steven Adams or Alperen Şengün is. They have more flexibility to play with two big lineups with different styles. Şengün, your skilled creator, dribble handoffs, attacking from the perimeter with face-ups, low post skill. Şengün's a skilled guy. Capela, more of the lob guy, the vertical guy. Steven Adams, more of the bruising rebounder, the tough guy. So they have three different types of bigs that Ime Udoka can put out there. And so these bigs leave for new teams. What does this all mean for the Los Angeles Lakers? All signs point to them getting either Brook Lopez or Clint Capela or DeAndre Ayton after Ayton ended up getting waived by the Portland Trail Blazers. That has not quite happened yet. He still could go to LA. We'll see about that again. We're recording this at 1:24 p.m. Eastern, 10:24 Pacific on Tuesday. He still could go to the Lakers. But Ayton's no guarantee. There's a reason why the Suns wanted to trade him. There's a reason why Kevin Durant and Devin Booker wanted him gone. There's a reason why the Blazers are waving him. They're waving him because they were fed up with his inconsistent effort, his lack of reliability, the fact that it's a sprinkle of snow outside, he can't drive to the practice facility because of the icing on the street. I mean, call the team and let them know you can't come. How stupid is that? I still can't get over that. Anyway, the Blazers were fed up with him. And so he's no guarantee for the Lakers, okay? He's no guarantee, whereas Lopez and Capela might be older, but you know what you're going to get. So they need a big. They go and sign Jake LaRavia to a two-year, $12 million contract. I like the LaRavia addition. I think he's a better defender than he gets credit for. He's a very good spot-up shooter. It sucks you lose Dorian Finney-Smith, who is a better defender than LaRavia, but LaRavia is not a bad replacement. With that said, though, all reports are that the Lakers are still trying to retain cap space for the future. We talked earlier in the week with Jovan Bua about the Rich Paul quotes on the record about how LeBron is opting in, but he is going to reevaluate his future depending on what happens this offseason. The latest reports from David McMenamin, among others, who have said that Pelinka is signaling he wants to retain 2027 cap space. This could be one of two things. One, this could be like return to serve to LeBron James. Like, okay, we know what you're doing. We're going the other way. You want to win now? We're retaining cap space to 2027. Now what? It could be that. Or it could be genuine. It could be true. Everything about the Lakers has indicated they're not trading future picks. They're building for the future. All of their choices in the last 2-3 years have been about that. This is consistent with their actions. If it's the latter, if it's that they are trying to retain cap space for 2027, I think that is so foolish. It is so foolish because you have Luka Doncic right now, who is seemingly getting into the best shape of his entire career, who has been to an NBA Finals, who has been to two Western Conference Finals, who has been on the top five of MVP ballots multiple times in his career, and who could very well be entering the prime of his career. And if you're going to punt 2 years for 2027 for a guy you might get or might not get that may or may not be available, it is stupid. It is stupid if that's the truth with what the Lakers are angling to do. You don't punt 2 years with Luka on your team. It is foolish and short-sighted. It makes no sense to me at all. So I don't think it's that. I don't think the Lakers are that dumb. I think it's the other side of it. I think it's what I speculated about earlier this week with Jovan. I think it's what I wrote about on Yahoo. It's that they are firing back at LeBron saying, no, well, we're not trying to win right now with you. That's what I think it is. I think the Lakers want to move on from LeBron James, or rather, they want LeBron James to move on from them. That's what my gut's telling me. This is not sourced at all. I just think their actions speak loudly here. I think they want LeBron James to ask out for a trade and for them to have a clean slate moving forward, because it sure as hell is hard to build the way they may want to build with LeBron James making over $50 million, being over 40 years old, being a guy with maybe only 1 year left on his contract. I think the Lakers want LeBron to move on from them. Now, the difficulty here is this. As Jovan and I talked about earlier in the week, there's speculation among league front offices that LeBron is angling for a buyout. I can't imagine why the Lakers would just give him a buyout. I just don't see it. I just don't see why they would do that. It just seems silly to me. You got to get something back for LeBron rather than just say, hey, you want to go? We're going to buy you out after you opted into your $50 million contract. It just seems silly to me. Maybe I'm thinking too logically about a lot of this, but I just think it just seems silly. I don't think you're going to buy him out. I'd imagine somebody's going to step up and trade for LeBron if it comes to that. Who is the question? Cleveland, we talked about, extremely difficult for them to get under the second apron. You'd have to trade Darius Garland and Jared Allen and at least Max Strus, maybe more, in order to make that happen. Just feels unrealistic. The Knicks, I mean, you could see it, but I'm not totally certain they would go that route. Maybe with the Knicks, as we talked about earlier in the week. The Warriors, they're interesting. They lost Kevon Looney to the Pelicans, 2 years, $16 million. Looney's way past his prime. I mean, good luck to New Orleans missing the playoffs when you don't have your pick. You do you, Joe Dumars. The Warriors are interesting because they could just trade Jimmy Butler straight up. The Dallas Mavericks, they're interesting because LeBron has his longtime friendship with Kyrie Irving and with Anthony Davis. They have a bunch of tradable pieces they could put together and still have some depth. So, I mean, I still can't help but think it's Dallas or Golden State if LeBron James does ask out. Dallas or Golden State, in part because the relationships. Stephen Curry and Draymond Green with the Warriors, Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis with the Mavericks. Other than that, like, I have a hard time finding the next home for LeBron. And so it wouldn't shock me if he ends up back in LA next season, but it's weird. Like we've seen this playbook before from Clutch, you know, go all in. You have LeBron James. What are you waiting for? What are you doing? We've seen this time and time again for a decade plus. But this time's a little different. It just feels different. It doesn't mean it won't be the same result, but something's a little different when you talk to people around the league about this whole situation with the Lakers. And as I said, we're recording this. It's 1:30 now in the afternoon on Tuesday. We could see a report in 5 minutes before this is even uploaded that the Lakers made a big move and that LeBron James is, you know, tweeting out smiley faces and he's, you know, strive for greatness and all that. And he's very happy. That could happen, but something's off here. Something's different. Well, those are the biggest NBA offseason moves so far. We'll be back again at some point later in this week talking about everything else that's happening around the NBA and summer leagues right around the corner as well. I'm looking forward to recording some podcasts out there, maybe get some rookies on as well and some NBA media friends. So we get a lot going on this month of July. Stay tuned on Yahoo Sports. Subscribe there on YouTube. Subscribe to my show on the podcast feeds on Spotify and Apple. Thanks to Madison and the whole team for producing today's episode. We'll be back again sometime later this week when news breaks.